Blog Talk Radio.
A great big hello and welcome. You're listening to the Palm Springs Savant and Company radio show. I'm Rick Rockhill, your host. Welcome today. We have a great show lined up for you. We're going to be talking with the well-known actress, Miss Linda Gray, well-known to millions around the world as Sue Ellen Ewing from the hit TV show Dallas. She'll be joining us shortly during the show. Today's topic is about the soon-to-be-released film Expecting Mary. It's a full-feature independent film, and we'll be talking about that today. Before we get into today's show, I'd like to just remind you that in the month of September here in the U.S., it is National Guide Dog Month, and we are trying to raise $1 million for guide dog schools around the country. And so I have a quick public service announcement from actress Nicolette Sheridan and Dick Van Patten.
Hi, I'm Nicolette Sheridan, and I'm here with Dick Van Patten to ask for your support during National Guide Dog Month.
Now, we've teamed up with Petco to raise $1 million so the people who don't have the gift of sight receive guide dogs.
It takes more than 2 years and over $40,000 to train one single guide dog. So with your donation, we can help guide dog schools train dogs to provide safe mobility, companionship, and the miracle of independence to the blind.
So please, make a donation today when you check out.
Through the gift of a guide dog, together, we can make a difference.
So you can go to any Petco store this month and donate at the registers for guide dogs, or you can go online to petco.com/naturalbalance and make your donation today. Okay, well, going to jump right into the show now because we've got a lot to talk about. Expecting Mary is a film I've actually talked about on the show before. It is a new independent feature film written and directed by Dan Gordon, brought to the screen from Wonderstar Productions and J&J Productions. It is a film that's been a hit at multiple film festivals this year. In fact, it was voted an audience favorite and received a Telly Award for comedy. Very impressive when you think about what's happened so quickly with this film having been brought to screen in a very short time. So we're going to start off the show here with a guest caller. As you know, we have Linda Gray calling in shortly, but I'm going to start off with a friend of mine, the executive producer of Expecting Mary, Mr. Jim Casey. Jim?
Rick.
Good morning.
How are you? Good morning.
Appreciate you being here on the show today. I know you're out traveling right now. Where are you, in Utah somewhere today?
Well, close. Jacksonville, Wyoming. So
okay, Wyoming.
I'm looking at the big sky country.
It's a beautiful part of the country.
Really. It is. Beautiful.
Well, first of all, congratulations on getting this terrific film made.
Thank you.
My hat goes off to you. And an incredible task, incredible feat of accomplishment, but when you look at what's out there on the screen right now, it is you've really produced a gem that I think is going to stand out among so many of the other films that are being released at this exact time. You're very fortunate in that you have a real winner on your hands. But I guess you knew that already, didn't you?
Well, you hope. I mean, you hope when you hear what the story was about, and it touched my heart when Dan and Linda brought it to me. And you know, you just hope, like when you raise a child, that they're going to turn out the way you wanted them, and that they can give something back to the world. So we're very fortunate at this point.
Yes, yes. It's you know, I've had the pleasure of seeing the film at film festivals and attended the screening in New York recently with you as a benefit for the Actors Fund. And I think what has impressed me along the way, the number of people who see this film for the first time who are who generally are moved, who enjoy it, and the people who are just really happy to see the broadcast that you have here. You have a really prestigious, solid cast. What shocked me, just for folks to hear who's in this film, you have an Academy Award winner, Cloris Leachman. You have an Academy Award nominee, Elliot Gould. Emmy Golden Globe nominee, Lainey Kazan. Emmy-nominated Golden Globe winner, recipient of several international awards, Linda Gray. Four People's Choice Award winner, Sybil Shepherd. Fred Willard. Alicia Rowland from High School Musical. Gene Simmons makes an appearance in this, Gene Simmons from Kiss. And then, of course, the incomparable Della Reese. What an amazing, solid cast. So how did
it
you
is. I mean, we're...
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, you know, I think it speaks to, you know, the reality that there is a certain level of ageism in Hollywood. And you have all this wonderful cast who has a wonderful history and who has such an amount of time developing their craft in acting. And, you know, what touched me about the story that Dan wrote was that each one of the characters had something so special about them. And each one of those characters were over the age of 50. And you really could relate to them at whatever age level you're at. And then you have Alicia, who plays a 16-year-old pregnant runaway, who also gets something from each one of the characters and gives something to each one of the characters along her path in this movie. And, you know, when you talk to someone as accomplished as, you know, Linda Gray, who, you know, started out as a model at the, you know, ripe old age of 18, who's been in this business ever since, and this story, the two combined, it's kind of like, you know, I feel like the Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney musicals. It's like a bunch of friends got together and made a movie because it was so compelling and that they were available, and it wasn't about the money. It was about the story. It was about producing and starring in and collaborating on just a wonderful script that could touch so many people.
The script really does touch so many people in different kinds of ways.
Right.
Now, did you find when you set the script out to be read by, when you were searching to cast the film, you know, people come from all walks of life and backgrounds. Sure. This diverse cast, did you get any different feedback or different perspectives on the script from the various actors as they read it for the first time?
You know, everybody came back. I mean, it was funny with Elliot, who I've known for a few years now, and when I sent it to him, it was immediate. He said immediately, he goes, "I love it. I want to sit down and talk to the director, see what his vision for this character is, and, you know, if it matches mine." And Dan was so wonderful as a director and a writer that he would collaborate on them, and, you know, we shot this in 18 days, which was also, you know, an amazing feat. The amount of time that we had to spend was very limited. There was just this, you know, every day each actor came in and crafted their character so quickly. And again, I think that speaks to their experience, that someone could sit down, read the script, be touched by it, have a vision, bring it to screen, and do it in such an unbelievably professional manner. So we got a lot of great feedback. And again, it's an independent film, so none of these actors got paid a lot of money to do it, but they really just felt that this was a story they wanted to be part of.
Now, if when I look at the list of the cast list here, some of them have film experience, some of them have a variety of experience. I mean,
right.
Gene Simmons, is this not his first appearance in a feature film?
I believe it is. I'm not sure. He may have done cameos as himself in other projects, but this is one where he plays, as he calls it, an over-the-hill rocker who's had one gig in life. So he does play a rocker, but at the end of the day, he does it, again, in that one-take wonder that he just had a short amount of time to do his scene. It was a great thing for us to have him involved.
Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise. And there's this expectation about what, you know, you think this character is going through, Mary, when she's going through the this journey to see her dad. You have an expectation of, you know, he's going to save the day, and I'm not going to do any spoilers here, but I think how his character plays out in the film very early on really sets the tone of Mary's, you know, what she can expect out of life and what she needs to do to change her course. I think that, you know, he actually, while it's a small role, it's a pivotal role in the direction that this character has to take.
Oh, totally. I mean, she has, and again, I think the title, when we were tossing around titles, when Expecting Mary came about, it's covered so many avenues because it is what Mary's expecting certain people in her life to do for her, expecting what they're going to support her with, and the expectations of other characters in her life that fall short for her. And again, all the other people that say, oh, look, Mary's here, you know, this is what I expect to get out of Mary. So it really has a, you know, and of course she's pregnant, so that expecting part goes without saying. But yeah, Jean, I mean, the Jean's role is definitely a pivotal point in the movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and I have to ask you, did you ask Jean for any tickets for any of his upcoming concerts? All of a sudden you're a Kiss fan overnight?
Exactly. I never knew I wanted to go to a Kiss concert so badly. But that's the one, you know, Gene's so great because he's touring now. Kiss is touring. And, you know, that's all these actors throughout the course. I mean, they love to work. They have to work. It's in them. You know, obviously, you know, helps financially, but at the same time, they want to support the movie. So, although Gene couldn't be available for some of the premieres, he has sent tape videos for it, and he's just such a great guy. Very, very supportive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. I want to just change gears a little bit here, Jim, because I've gotten actually some emails from folks who, from the independent filmmaking world, who heard about this show coming up, this segment, and, you know, asked me some questions. And, you know, there's a lot of young filmmakers out there, and people mm-hmm. who've done it and who are still struggling, and people who have not done it who are trying to break in. Just last week, I was at a TV studio in San Diego, and we were sitting in the green room with Steve Garvey, and we were about to go on air, and these guys who had just put together an independent film, they were plugging it on a local TV station to get some coverage, and they shared with us the struggles that they're having to get uh-huh. a film made. It is really amazing. So they're not easy to bring to silver screen. Can you give yep. our listeners some background on the process of what it takes to make an independent film?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I just kind of sum up what the process feels like, which is when I asked Kim Waltrip, who's my producing partner, who was the producer on Expecting Mary, and she's the mother of a 16-year-old son, you know, and I don't obviously have children, and I asked her, well, you know, you've given birth and you've made an independent film. She goes, oh, Lord, she goes, giving birth was the easy part. So she has, it is like, for a lot of, and, you know, instances, you have this dream, you have to cultivate it. And, you know, for me, as the executive producer, my main role was the money. And, you know, you have this great project, and so many independent filmmakers have great projects and great scripts and great ideas. Unfortunately, not only with this economy, but the studios are tight for cash, and there's a lot of investors who are tight for cash. And as an investment advisor, I've told anybody who's investing in this project, you know, don't expect your money back. This is one of those high-risk investments. So in a world right now that's very risk-averse, that's really hurdle number one. But a lot of people get involved in the independent film world and getting the films made. The best advice I could tell them is raise as much money as you can, more than you need, because you're inevitably going to need more money than you expect to. And you've got to tie a project to that money that touches a chord with people. And unfortunately, in my humble opinion, I think a lot of studios are just churning out movies that they know will make money eventually, even in foreign sales. There's a lot of special effects. There's a lot of bang them up, blow them up. And I just think you have to look at the market and say, what's different? What's missing? What do we need right now? And, you know, that's when I heard about Expecting Mary for Band. It was like, God, you know, this touched something in my soul that I wanted to actually, you know, produce this for the masses. My mom, who can't find a good movie to go see because she doesn't want to see all these special effects. You just got to find a niche market. It's the best thing I could say. But and don't give up. I mean, it's really a lot of, this is a year and a half of 24/7, and that's what it takes.
Yeah, I'm sure it has been a labor of love. But to a large degree, good independent films start with a good script. And I think
always.
It has to. In some ways, I think when you go to film festivals and you go on that circuit and you start not only watching the films, but you listen to what people say, they seem to be more in tune with the message, the feel, the aesthetics. I mean, it is less about entertain me for an hour or two, although that's some of it, but it's also what's going on here, what's the message. And so the script is essential. And so in Dan Gordon, you know, I think you had that going into this.
Oh, I mean, Dan is an amazing, amazing screenwriter. I mean, he wrote Passenger 57 and The Hurricane. He was the lead writer on Highway from Heaven. I mean, he just has a wonderful ability to craft the characters. And that's, again, I go back to this with Expecting Mary. I mean, I think with any independent film and with any film, when you have characters that people can relate to on so many different levels, it's going to resonate, and it starts with the character, and I think there is a great ability for characters to tell the story, to get the message across. And I've seen a lot of these independent films, and the only, critical thing that I would say is sometimes it's too much about the message, and you lose the characters, in between. If an independent film has to stand on its own because we don't have the big budgets for the big plane crashes and the big Spider-Man's, scaring walls throughout Manhattan, you've got to get that message across, and it's got to, really start, as you said, with the script, and the script is the key. And I think you have to have, it's the team. You've got to let the director, you've got to let the producers be the producers, you've got to let the writer be the writer, and let the stars do what they have to do in emoting that script, because they've got to take the script off the page and bring it to life. Mm-hmm. And we were very fortunate, obviously, with the cast that we had, that we just kind of sat back and let them do their thing.
And I mentioned earlier that you have this impressive cast. It's a pretty broad group of actors you assembled. Now, was it difficult to work with such a large group? And you did this in a very short time window. Right. How long did it take to film this?
18 days. We filmed it in 18 days. We've actually went into pre-production July of 2009. So this film will go from pre-production to theaters in less than a year and a half. And again, that was, it's been a whirlwind ride. But the actors, I have to say, were the easy part. We had an amazing casting couple, the casting directors that brought these people in. And again, it was a lot of who knew who. Do you know so-and-so? Dan had, as I sat there with lunch, with him and Linda, when he was describing each character, he went through, okay, here's Annie, and I think so-and-so should play her. Here's Horace, and I think so-and-so should play him. And almost everybody was our first choice we ended up getting, which was, again, very fortunate. And it speaks to the fact that we were able to have the director be the writer, so that if there was a script change that needed to be made because there was some delay over here, he would sit there and just, write it, and then go, boom, right back to work. And Linda, I know she's coming on, so send her my love, but she was the mother hen of this entire crew. She was the glue, emotionally and otherwise. And she, I think, worked with almost every character in there. And she just really held it all together for everybody.
Well, you're lucky to have such a talented cast who were also passionate about this film. Yeah. We're speaking with Jim Casey, the executive producer of the new, soon-to-be-released independent film, Expecting Mary. The national being released nationwide in select theaters starting September 10th. Is that right, Jim?
September 10th, and they can go on our website to find out what theaters we're playing in and when we're going to be there.
Right, expectingmary.com. Tickets are available in select theaters now. I actually went online and bought a couple tickets in the Palm Springs area. So if you go to the expectingmary.com website, you can look at the select cities that the film will be premiering in and get your tickets now. They are available. So, Jim, I want to thank you for calling in
today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. We have on the line right now a woman who really needs no introduction. It's the award-winning actress known best for her role to millions as Sue Ellen Ewing on TV's long-running series Dallas. She's now starring in Expecting Mary, which I mentioned will be released nationwide in select theaters on September 10th. I'd like to welcome Linda Gray. Linda, are you with us?
Here. Can you hear me?
Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hello. It's wonderful to be on your show. Thank you for asking me.
Well, thanks for being here. We've just been speaking with Jim Casey, and Jim, I just want to thank you for being on the show and wish you well. So, Linda, what an honor to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you. And I've been listening to part of Jim's interview. Really, really lovely. It's always nice to hear from an executive producer, all the things they have to go through. So, yes, all through.
It's a challenge. You, of course, need no introduction, but I just feel compelled to share with our listeners as a reminder that you are an award-winning actress, you're an accomplished director, and I understand a United Nations ambassador. You've earned an Emmy nomination for Best Actress. You won several achievements, including Germany's Bambi Award, which is like our Academy Award, Italy's Il Gatto for Best Actress. You've been voted Woman of the Year by the Hollywood and Radio Television Society. Your stage work includes The Graduate in London's West End Theater District, as well as Terms of Endearment and Love Letters early on in your career, and numerous TV series and programs throughout your career. Such an impressive background, and you've just been a delight to millions around the world. So how's that?
Wow. Oh, yeah, I'm sitting here in my kitchen kind of blushing. It's like, wow, that I did all that?
Incredible.
But thank you for reminding me, I guess. Thank you.
Well, I mean, you, as I said, so many people do know you from a very high-profile role as Sue Ellen Ewing, and it was a great character. It really did a lot for television and still in syndication around the world today. But what is it about this role that you have in Expecting Mary, in this script that appealed to you so much?
Well, I'll take you back just a tiny bit, just a little bit before Expecting Mary. Dan Gordon, the writer, had seen me in The Graduate, and at that time he came to me and said, would you consider doing Terms of Endearment as a theater piece? And that was pretty daunting to think I was already doing an Anne Bancroft role and jumping into a Shirley MacLaine role. It was like, oh, my gosh, what am I, masochistic? What is this? So anyway, I said, sure, why not? So he wrote he got the rights and wrote Terms of Endearment, and we took it on tour in the provinces of England just to try it out and see how audience reaction was, how scenes were playing, etc. But I we did it for about 6 months, and I cried every night, 8 nights a week for 6 months. And I adore Dan Gordon's writing, so I said, I really appreciate Terms of Endearment. I had the most incredible acting experience on stage. But I need to do something lighter. I'm worn out. I'm exhausted.
Sure.
And when I go into a role, I mean, I go into it and I stay there. It's like, oh my God, I was just a wreck. So anyway, we sat down and sort of tossed around ideas, and I wanted to do something heartfelt and meaningful and something my own children and grandchildren could see. I wanted something that I could be proud of and say, you know, this is a wonderful movie that people don't get enough of these days. And I feel that they want to see actors that they recognize, that, you know, that have been part of their growing up as far as entertainment is concerned. So he came up with this delicious character of Darnell Adair. And I mean, it couldn't have been more perfect. The timing was perfect. She was a delicious character, and she didn't have a man like J.R. Ewing. she was single. She was charming, had an indomitable spirit, and she, even though her life had shrunk from the Las Vegas stage and all that glitter and glamour, it shrunk down to a trailer in a trailer park, and the stage was about 6x6 instead of a glamorous Las Vegas stage. But her spirit was never shrunk. And when Mary arrives into her life, her life expands, and it gives her hope, and her spirit just rises and shines. And I had the pleasure of working with almost every actor that was in the ensemble, except I didn't work with Fred Willard. Nobody did, and everybody wanted to. And I didn't work with Elliot, but I got to hang out with him a little on the set, and Gene Simmons. So I didn't work with the men, which was very, very sad. But I got to work with delicious women, you know, Cloris and Della and Lainey and dear Alicia and Sybil. And I'd never had the pleasure of working with them. I had worked with Della on Touched by an Angel. But to gather everybody that was over 50, well, that was a prerequisite of mine. I said, there's so many wonderful actors out there that don't get the opportunity right now, since everything is so youth-oriented, to work. or to work with a great script. So when this happened, we just went after it. I heard Jim Casey say that, you know, the script drew in all these wonderful actors, which it did. And everyone had their beautiful cameos, and they were well. It was an orchestrated script that put everyone in and around and through. And even though it was 18 days, every single one of those professional actors just stood up, and nobody phoned it in. Everybody knew their lines. They knew we had a time crunch. Nobody misbehaved. On the contrary, everybody was laughing and giggling and bonding because we knew this was this was down and dirty film warfare. There was no
get her done.
Yeah, it was like get her done, get her quick, get it out. And so the professionals, which we had, that was the whole cast. Everybody was professional.
That's very fortunate to have that in such a broad cast as well. I'd like to play a little clip, if I may. I'm hoping that you'll be able to hear this. It's actually part of the trailer. I've got two different clips, but let me play this first one for our listeners, and we can chat about it.
Sure.
Okay, here goes.
Meet Mary.
Dad?
Mary, you look so much older than in your last picture and so much more preggers.
A girl with nowhere to go.
Mind if I ask a question?
I'm 16. I'm not married. I ran away from home. I'm just about 8 months pregnant and going to see my father-in-law. Having a baby there. Does that pretty much cover it?
No, not really.
Well, that's about all I've got.
Can you tell us, what is it that was going on in that particular scene? I'm not sure how well you heard that.
Yes, I heard it. Let's see, there's sort of two bits there. One was with Elliot and one was with Gene Simmons. Gene Simmons is the father, a rock star, aging rock star, who opens the door and there's his pregnant daughter. And, he says, hey, you're preggers. Preggers, Mary. And he's sort of this wonderful, disconnected father who had a one-hit pony, and it didn't do very well. So he's going on this tour, and Mary wants to be with him to have her child. And that obviously is not the case. And then that second bit was with Elliot in the truck, where she says, I'm 16, I'm not married, you ran away from home. That's with Elliot in the very beginning, where she's hitchhiking at 8 months eight months pregnant. So those are two wonderful bits that kind of show, who Mary is, who she is, where she's going. She's going to see her father, Gene Simmons, in California, hitchhiking with the truck driver, who's Elliot Gould, on her way to see Dad.
Great.
I'm
going to play the second clip. You did a great job, which has a little bit of your character. So let's take a listen to this.
Sure.
Searching for a place to fit in.
I'm a runaway. I hitched a ride with a polka-loving truck driver. It's not like I've got this all planned out,
Searching for a place she can call home.
What is this place?
Maybe the village. Or the trailer park, but we like a village.
This place? Really odd.
You can't go around shooting children with a shotgun.
There's nothing to do in this town except scare pigs and shoot children. Oopsie-doo.
The economy is in a dump. You live in a dump. I own a dump.
And I gotta be honest, you and your friends, there's a huge weirdness factor here.
Duh.
So there's some fun going on there, a lot happening in that clip. With any of those you'd like to comment on, Linda?
Well, they all brought back the visceral feeling of all of those scenes that were, the minute Mary started speaking, I was right inside the trailer, and I was with Cloris, and then I heard Della's voice. Della owns the trailer park. She's not very friendly, And Cloris is my next-door neighbor who raises pigs. Enough said. And Mary spends the night in my trailer. And it's kind of like, this is a very weird place, and you guys are pretty weird characters. And she's right. So that's kind of sums it up without revealing too much.
Right.
But
now,
it's Darnella, charm. It's delicious. What can I say?
Darnella is a bit of a departure for you, I would think.
Thank God. I love
such a graceful, such a graceful lady. But how did you prepare for this character? It's an interesting part.
Well, I remember preparing for Stu Ellen Ewing. I didn't have much to do in the beginning, so I would hang out at beauty salons because I didn't know about Texas women. I didn't know I didn't know much about them. So I thought, I'll just go listen to Texas women. So I went to very high-end beauty salons, and I'd get my nails done, get my hair done, and I'd listen. And it was quite interesting what I heard. So I start from the basement, and I gather as much information as I possibly can, and I start creating, and that's how you do it, because then when you step into that character, and wardrobe is huge for me, like Sue Ellen wore only designer clothes. Darnella wore only clothes that didn't cost more than $25, literally. We had the most fun. I think that was most fun of all, was choosing the clothing. And I went to the pretty funny places in Los Angeles to dig them out, and I borrowed an outfit from my girlfriend of mine, a sort of a flamenco dancer thing. So that was borrowed, and, we blinged out everything. There were sequins everywhere.
And you don't think you have sequins and feathers in your house, are you?
But my house looks very bland. Very bland. I put some little twinkling lights around. Now, so I dyed my hair red. I wanted her to be redhead. And we had lots of extensions, and everything was bigger than. Sue Ellen had bigger shoulder pads, but Darnella has bigger everything, lashes and hair and shorter skirts and higher heels. So everything's kind of over the top, but the red hair had to be. I just saw her immediately. It was like, okay, that's done. Check that. Get the hair dyed. Get the wardrobe, and then find out who she was. What was it like in Las Vegas during Sinatra's time? And my ex-husband, bless his soul, he did all the album covers for Sinatra. Ed Thrasher was his name. And so I used to go before Dallas. I was a wife and soon to be mom. In the 60s, I was sitting in a recording studio watching Frank Sinatra, perform his album. So, I went back to that time, and I remember sitting in the kitchen and Bobby Darin singing to me, Mac and Ice, in a kitchen. And then going to recording studio, and Jimmy Webb was singing Up, Up, and Away on a piano in the recording place in Encino. And so, I lived at that era, and I had a 56 T-Bird. It was white with turquoise and white upholstery. So
cool.
I went back, and I went into old scrapbooks that I had of modeling days. I started out as a model in the late 50s. And so I went back and I had those photographs. There's a photograph of Marilyn Monroe that we put my picture in, and it was the same time. That wasn't a huge stretch for me because I didn't live in Las Vegas and I wasn't a showgirl, but I knew that era. I knew Frank Sinatra, and I knew Dean Martin, and I knew those people. I didn't hang out with them, but my ex-husband, he shot all those album covers. So I had an affinity for that time.
That's just amazing. We are, for those of you who may have just tuned in, we're speaking with the incomparable actress, Ms. Linda Gray. She's joining us today to talk about her new film, Expecting Mary, which will be released nationwide in select theaters on September 10th. You can go to expectingmary.com to find the cities where it will be opening and how to buy tickets for the film. Please go out and support this great independent film. Expecting Mary is the story of a pregnant young Mary who has all the trappings of an upscale life, but only when she finds herself in a small New Mexico town in a downtrodden trailer park that she learns the real meaning of love, sacrifice, and family. And Linda, in her character as Darnella, lives in this downtrodden trailer park. So, Linda, you've been gracious to share some of the background of the character. What are the overall themes and messages of Expecting Mary? What are the things that you take out of the film when you see it or when you read the script?
Well, I think that mothers are going to learn a lot. Young girls are going to learn a lot. Mothers are going to learn that, it's not it's not in anybody's best interest to send your child away and have them raised by nannies. Young girls will know that it's not all that it's cracked up to be pregnant at 16. They will know that a real family isn't all about money and private schools and all that, those trappings. It's about a love on a deep level, and it's about creating a family. And Darnella says a wonderful thing about, you know, you don't choose, you know, you don't choose your own family, you make your own family. So I think what happens is that Mary comes into this very odd sort of circumstances with a lot of weird people, but she finds love. She finds a family that she didn't have, and she finds a deep love that she didn't have before. But there's a reunion at the end where everybody gets together, but everybody learns their lesson. And to me, that's what life is all about. I mean, we look at our lives and we think, how did I live my life? Did I do the best I could? And we all have, you know, we've all tripped and fallen down, skinned our knees, but we get back up again. But this shows that it's a different way of looking at things, where we think, oh, we'll do the best for our child and we'll send them away, but is that the best? Or is being with them the best? Loving them fully, being there in person, is that the best? Or is getting pregnant at 16 saying something like, I'll show my parents, is that the best thing to do? Is that the best way to bring in a child to this very complicated world? So these are things that are exposed in the most delightful, charming, real, heartfelt way. And you will laugh and you'll cry. And to me, that's what going to the movies is all about. It's about feeling.
Yes. Well, I think what struck me, having seen this film a few times now, is the broad appeal. You know, it's a very fine line, I think, when you're telling this kind of story, that you don't get too patronizing or you don't get too mushy or too religious or too this or too that. Because you want the film to appeal to a broad base, but you don't want to alienate too large a segment of the population. And
exactly.
That's what I think is part of the brilliance of this film, because the script is remarkable. But when you watch this film, it works for families. You don't even notice the fact until later. There's no cursing in the film. There's no nudity, no violence. There's nothing that's inappropriate for a family, most families, to enjoy. This film does appeal to families who have the family values, traditions, but it's not so in your face that if you are if you're left or right of the spectrum, this wouldn't turn you off either way. It's just a good, clean, entertaining, and funny film.
And see, to get all that in one film without one car chase or one, piece of nudity or swearing, that's challenging. And it goes back to, when I heard you speaking to Jim earlier, it goes back to the script. I mean, the script is genius. And where it wove everyone all together. And, it wasn't preachy, but you can still, I can take my grandkids to see this.
Sure.
And which I'm thrilled and proud of. And, there's messages, but nothing is hit over the head, because I can't stand those kinds of things either.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people in our age category, they look through the paper, they don't find anything to see.
You know,
it's like, what am I going to look? What am I going to do? So they end up, renting Netflix, So it's like, okay, now you can find something you can take everybody to, and without being preachy, like you said, and without doing anything other than entertain you.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that everyone in this cast is pretty much over 50. It's
mm-hmm.
tough. I've heard you say this before, and we've spoken. It's tough finding good roles for actors over a certain age in Hollywood today.
Oh.
Why is that?
I don't know. And I think that's something that Hollywood needs to address, because I think, I think I even heard Jim say it. Hollywood, I think, confused right now. I don't think that they know. They don't have a magic wand, and they're confused. And I think they're doing something part three and this and that, and then something comes out, and it's a hit, and then they copy it. It's like I wish that creative people would take the helm again and say, you know what, this is not working. They're only doing what they call tentpole movies at this time. It's like, the big ones. And not not everybody is excited about those big ones. They'd rather see smaller independent films or smaller films that don't cost $200 million, but have something to say. I think Hollywood has kind of lost its way for me. And by dismissing the the older group of us, I think that's an oversight. And I think that they're doing, you know, massive amounts of number crunching that doesn't make any sense as far as the theater goers. They think they know what people want to see, and yet people don't want to see that. So
well, you're
little,
so right.
Yeah.
In speaking with Sylvester Stallone, he was talking about how difficult it was for him to get his movie made. Now, that's a very different movie, a lot of action scenes in that. But here's a guy who made millions, billions, who knows how much, I'm told, around the world for all of his Rocky movies and, you know, so many Rambo and whatnot. And yet he told the story, he shared how when he went to the studios, they did not want to make this movie he just made. He couldn't get funding. He had to go, I mean, Sylvester Stallone, he had to go to the independent route to bring his film concept, his script to the screen. And he had, you know, all actors over a certain age in that primarily. But yet, what was surprising was how well that film was accepted by, let's face it, there's a young generation of people who probably didn't see all of Sylvester Stallone's films, yet they turned out in big numbers for his film. So here's a guy who went through the same struggles that probably Expecting Mary needed to get funding and yet had to go an independent route. It is a mystery to me, too, why that ageism is so prevalent in Hollywood, despite the fact that some excellent, amazing talent who really are the audiences want to see and hear from these folks, just like yourself.
Thank you. Well, you know, I think that it's an oversight. I really do. And I think that they get wake-up calls occasionally, but I don't think they pay very much attention. It's kind of a little blip on the screen. You know, but they kind of, like I remember, Lainey Kazan and I were on, CNN. We did, the Joy Behar show, but she wasn't there that day. Somebody else was. And, they were talking about the older actors, Julia Roberts, Sarah Jessica Parker. And it was kind of interesting to think that Hollywood thinks that women over 40, or who have just turned 40, Catherine Zeta-Jones, I think, just turned 40, that they're old. And, you know, Lainey and I were looking at each other like, old? Are you kidding me? You know, what is this? And it's so funny because there's a dismissal age at a certain point. It's like, oh, no, you're too old. But they forget that there's life experience, there's wisdom, there's professionalism that comes with our stuff that we bring to the screen that you can't get when you're 20, 30, maybe even 40, that they have dismissed, and they have the baby boomers, the biggest audience out there. They have more disposable income. They want to see great movies. They want to feel. They want to be entertained, and they're totally ignored. So I don't know. There's something. There's a little wisdom that Hollywood needs, a little wake-up call, I think.
Well, I am confident that when your fans see Expecting Mary, when they know that you're in this film, that they're going to hear about it, hopefully get the word out and show up to see this film, that will help turn the tide to sort of re-educate Hollywood on really this incredible talent pool that is ready, willing, and able to make good films and entertain audiences around the world today. So
I applaud you for having people like Jim and I on the show to talk about it and talk about, you know, how challenging it is to make independent films and to even to get them as an actor. So I really applaud you because people need to hear this.
Oh, sure. I thank you. The website for the movie is expectingmary.com. You can go to Linda Gray's website at lindagray.com, and I think there's some information, Linda, about what you're up to. Again, millions of people still follow and watch Dallas to this day all around the world. So there is bound to be very high interest in Expecting Mary, not only because of the script and the ensemble cast, but because of you, Linda. You have a tremendous reputation. So I'm hoping that this show will be heard around the world from the Internet, that people will download it and hear this story from you directly, Linda, and
oh,
come out
you.
And see the show.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being here, Linda. The amazing Linda Gray. Have a great time at the remaining festivals and screenings and premieres you have. I'm sure we'll be seeing you. I'm not sure, will you be in Palm Springs another week or so?
I think I've got a weird schedule. That's why.
You're busy.
I don't know where. I think kind of wind me up and I go, you know, with love and pleasure, sure. So I don't know where I'm going.
Well, great.
But
there'll be a special screening in Palm Springs at the Camelot Theater on, I think, September 9th. And tickets are available. It's a benefit screening for the Desert AIDS Project. You can go online to the expectandmarry.com website to buy tickets for that special advanced screening. Linda Gray, thank you so much for calling in today. I do appreciate it, and speak to you soon.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Care.
Well, that was amazing, Linda. She is a remarkable lady and so much to contribute to a show like this. So I hope you enjoyed that segment. We're going to take a very quick break with a PSA announcement from actress Nicolette Sheridan.
Hi, I'm Nicolette Sheridan, and I'm here with Dick Van Patten to ask for your support during National Guide Dog Month.
Now, we've teamed up with Petco to raise $1 billion so the people who don't have the gift of sight receive guide dogs.
It takes more than 2 years and over $40,000 to train one single guide dog. So with your donation, we can help guide dog schools train dogs to provide safe mobility, companionship, and the miracle of independence to the blind.
So please, make a donation today when you check out.
Through the gift of a guide dog, together, we can make a difference.
And this is National Guide Dog Month, and you can make a contribution to support guide dogs across the country by going to any Petco store this month and making a donation at the register. It takes over $40,000 and nearly 2 years to raise a guide dog. Your contribution will help provide more guide dogs for people who cannot see. You can also donate online from petco.com/naturalbalance, and it just takes a few minutes and you can make your donation and go back to your holiday weekend. So please consider that. We're going to welcome to the phones now another important person from the Expecting Mary film family. I'm really pleased to welcome producer Kim Waltrip to the show today. Kim, are you there?
I am here.
Welcome. I appreciate you calling in today.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, in the show today, we've had executive producer Jim Casey, of course, Linda Gray, the amazing Linda Gray. She and Jim really shared some insights and background into the film. And I appreciate you being here also because you have a different perspective, having been very hands-on with this film. So I want to kind of get some background from you. I want to pull some things out of you today for our listeners.
All right.
Part of that is because I know we do have some independent filmmaker groups who are listening to this show who've actually written to me ahead of time having seen this and really wanted to understand a little bit more about getting an independent film made. So first of all, I want to congratulate you. You've done an amazing job producing this film, so well done.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. But you know what? We had a great team of people. It takes, you know, it takes a village, not just one person. So I was blessed.
Or a trailer park.
Or a trailer park, exactly.
As Linda says in the film. What was the most difficult aspect of bringing this script to a reality?
You know, we were blessed with Jim Casey, who is our executive producer, in getting the funding we needed. And then the rest of it, the most difficult part is knowing that you have a limited amount of money and you've got to finish the film. So we only had 18 days to do it in. But, you know, credit goes out to our director, writer-director Dan Gordon, who not only made that happen, he did bring this film in 18 days. It was great knowing that each day before we started, he knew going in that if we were in trouble and we were going to run out of time, he was prepared and he planned his day accordingly, that he knew what to cut if we didn't have the time. So, you know, you have an 18-day shooting schedule. You have a certain amount of money, and then you have to try to make that happen. So every day is a challenge. Every day is different. You have weather elements to deal with. You have just stuff. Stuff happens. But fortunately, we did it. We had a great crew that worked tirelessly, and we worked, you know, into the wee hours of the morning. Our cast was just wonderful, and giving 100% of their time and professionalism. And you know, we have this legendary cast, so...
That helps.
It really does help because there was nothing they wouldn't do for us, which was really wonderful. They're such a professional group of people that they gave it their best.
How did you know you wanted to produce this film when you first read it?
You know, the story. I think everybody, the cast and everyone included, they wanted to do it because of the story, even our crew. They're like, oh, I want to be a part of this movie. And I think, you know, for first-time filmmakers, I think that's the most important thing they should focus on is the story. You know, make sure you've got a great story. That'll bring in a great cast. And if you can make it look nice, you know, you're probably going to get a distribution deal. And then the rest of it is just, you know, tenacity, tenacity, tenacity. You've got to work really hard, and we did. Everyone did. And anyway, so I wanted to be a part of it because of the story.
In fact, you also made a cameo appearance in it, didn't you? Was that fun?
I did. Well, it was unexpected because there was a little scene that Dan had written in, and we were going to have our stand-in do the part, but she wasn't a member of Screen Actors Guild, and I am. So I think it was our second AD or a line producer or something came up to me and said, can you do this part? And I had not washed my hair in days. But I had no ego at that point. I think it was like 3 o'clock in the morning or something, and I said, sure. So, yes, I have a little cameo. It was fun, though. It was really fun.
Once you had the film in the can, so to speak, as they say, you know, you had to go out and kind of promote it and pitch it. How important is the film festival circuit in that process?
Well, if you don't have a distributor going in, it's extremely important because it's an opportunity to get your film seen, to get the word of mouth, you know, out there and hopefully there will be film buyers at some of these festivals. So we did do that route. We started at the Palm Springs International Film Festival, and there were distributors in the audience, and they said, oh, we like this movie. So we kind of made our deal at that festival. And then there were a couple of other ones that we were asked to do, and then we sort of stopped doing them because we already had our deal and we knew we were going to distribute the movie in September, so, and that takes a lot of work. So we kind of stopped the festival route and just focused on our theatrical distribution.
Mm-hmm. Did anything surprise you while you were watching audiences view the film in the film festival world?
You know, yes. There was the nativity scene. I wasn't expecting the huge roar of laughter and applause. I knew it was funny, and I got it, but I didn't know if they would, so... It was a pleasant surprise to hear that applause and all the ruckus. So, yeah, and there were some other moments, too, where, you know, people just get a giggle out of things that happen. And I mean, it's hard to be objective because when you've seen the movie a million times, like I have during editing, sound, online, all of that, you lose perspective. And so when you sit with an audience, you know, I know all the little nuances and all the little boo-boos and, you know, things we took out and things we left in, whatever. And so just to hear it with an audience from beginning to end was just a wonderful validation for all of us that, you know, we did an okay job.
We're speaking with Kim Waltrip, the producer of the independent film Expecting Mary, soon to be released nationwide in select theaters on September 10th. You can find out more about the film at expectingmary.com. And the cities that it's playing in or will be playing in, please go out and buy your tickets ahead of time. Show support for this wonderful independent film. I played a clip earlier when Linda was on air, and I want to play it again with you so we can comment on that. This is a clip of the trailer that's available on your website. So let's just take a quick look.
Okay.
Searching for a place to fit in.
I'm a runaway. I hitched a ride with a polka loving truck driver. It's not like I've got this all planned out, you know.
Searching for a place she can call home.
What is this place?
We're the village. Or the trailer park, but we like a village.
This place? Really odd.
You can't go around shooting children with a shotgun.
There's nothing to do in this town except scare pigs and shoot children. Oopsie-doo.
The economy is in a dump. You live in a dump. I own a dump.
And I gotta be honest, you and your friends, there's a huge weirdness factor here.
Oh, duh.
There's a great scene in there with Della Reese, and right. Can you just kind of set that up briefly and just talk about that, but her and Linda and how that whole played out?
Right. Della owns the trailer park where Linda and Cloris live, and it's very odd, as you hear Alicia say. It's a very weird kind of place. And Della is the trailer park owner, and she is tough as nails. And Linda's just, you know, Miss All Butterflies and Life is Wonderful. So the dichotomy of those two characters is very funny because neither one of them affects each other until Linda goes to Della and says, hey, we're having a Christmas party. And the soft underbelly of Della kind of shines through there towards the end. And they're wonderful characters because there is such a clash of, you know, of personalities. Linda's just happy as can be, and life is wonderful, and Della's just a big old grumpy woman. So it's really fun to watch the transformation of actually both of the characters.
It's interesting you use that word because I was searching for it myself, that word, that transformation. There's multiple characters in this film go through a transformation in themselves, and I think that's part of the appeal.
They do, and they're all affected by this young girl she's a little bit in trouble. She got herself in a little bit of trouble, and it shows you that people are good and they want to help, and everybody's searching for a little love, some family. Everybody wants to be loved, and so I think it gives everyone an opportunity to do just that. You know, this little woman comes into their world, and they all wrap their arms around her, and they grow because of her, and wonderful things happen because of this unexpected woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wonderful to watch.
Well, we won't give away too many of the plots or surprises in the film, but I do, again, want to ask everyone listening to get out, spread the word. If you have a blog, if you are on Twitter or whatever your social network extends you to, get out there and talk about this film, and you can link back to expectingmary.com. Talk about it, because films, independent films, need to get they rely on the buzz factor, people to talk about it. They don't have huge advertising and marketing budgets. And if you like these characters, if you like this story, then we need people like you to get out there and talk about it on the Internet. So I urge you to do that. Kim, before we wrap up, I just quickly want to ask you, do you have any advice for fledgling independent filmmakers today?
I do. It's a business, and they need to remember that. And they need to be really smart with their money. You know, with all the technology that's out there today and all the new digital cameras and stuff, you don't need to spend a lot of money as a first-time filmmaker. They need to focus on the story and the cast, and if they bring in a well-shot film, you know, those three things should land a nice distribution deal. And then, like I said, the rest is hard work, but they need to know it's a tough business. And as a first-time filmmaker, if you're a director, you've got to be willing to kill your baby. If you shot a really long movie and someone says, yeah, well, it's not marketable, you need to listen to them. And if your cut doesn't work, you need to step back, take advice, and make sure that it's as marketable as possible. You need to make sure that your investor's money is well taken care of. Otherwise, you know, good luck getting anyone else to invest in your movies. But, you know, so you don't need to spend a lot of money.
What are the projects does the Wonder Star Productions have? We have just less than a minute remaining, but any other?
We have. I shot a film a couple of years ago called Adopt a Sailor, and that's out on video now, so you can buy that everywhere. It's a really smart film. It's really good. Bebe Neuwirth, Peter Coyote, and Ethan Peck. And then Jim Casey and I just finished a horror film, sort of the horror within genre, called I Didn't Come Here to Die. And then we have two projects we're slated to shoot within the next year. So we've got all kinds of stuff going on. So check my website as well, wonderstarproductions.com. And, and support us. This is a sweet movie, and independent films need to be supported. So,
agreed.
Thanks.
Well, Kim Waltrip, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. Wish you lots of luck with Expecting Mary, again, opening up nationwide in select theaters on September 10th. Go to expectingmary.com to find
and
out.
Buy a piggy bank.
And buy a piggy bank.
There's
great merchandise available on the website. Kim, thank you so much. You've been listening
Thanks.
To the Palm Springs Savant & Company radio show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Rick Rockhill, your host, and we'll see you next time on the Palm Springs Savant & Company.
Thanks, Rick.
Bye-bye, Kim.